what to do with my legs. If I'd been sure we wouldn't be using the kitchen table, I'd have wrapped my legs around his waist, but I didn't trust either of us that far. He put his arms under my butt so that my head was slightly above his, and I rested in his arms almost like I was in a swing. I could still feel him pressed hard and firm against my body, but it had a certain decorum to it that straddling his waist lacked. He started walking for the door, carrying me, his eyes so intent on my face that he almost tripped on a chair. It made me laugh, until his eyes came back to meet mine, and I saw the need in those dark eyes. That one look robbed me of speech, and all I could do was stare into his eyes as he carried me into the bedroom. 37. The bedroom was empty when he kicked the door shut behind us. I didn't know if the living room was empty or not. I couldn't remember anything but Richard's eyes from the kitchen to the bedroom. Every room might have been empty for all I'd seen. We kissed just inside the door. My hands were full of the rich thickness of his hair, the firm warmth of his neck. I explored his face with my hands, my mouth, tasted, teased, caressed, just his face. He drew back from my mouth enough to say,
"If I don't sit down, I'm going to fall down. My knees are weak."
I laughed, full-throated, and said, "Then put me down." He half-walked, half-staggered to the bed, laying me on it, going to his knees beside it. He was laughing as he crawled onto the bed beside me. He lay beside me, his knees hanging over the side of the bed, though since he was tall enough for his feet to actually touch the floor when he lay like that, maybe hanging wasn't the right word. We lay beside each other on the bed, laughing softly, not touching. We turned our heads to look at each other at the same moment. His eyes sparked with the laughter, his whole face almost shining with it. I reached out and traced the lines of laughter around his mouth. The laughter began to fade as soon as I touched him, his eyes filling up with something darker, more serious, but no less precious. He rolled onto his side. The movement put my hand along the side of his face. He rubbed his face into my hand, eyes closed, lips half-parted. I rolled onto my stomach and moved towards him, my hand still on his face. He opened his eyes, watching me crawl towards him. I propped myself up on hands and knees and watched his eyes as I leaned in towards his mouth. There was eagerness there, but there was also something else, something fragile. Did my eyes mirror that look? Half eager, half fearful, wanting, afraid to want, needing, and afraid to need. My mouth hovered over his, our lips touching, delicate as butterflies blown by a warm summer wind, touching, not touching, sliding along each other, gliding away. His hand grabbed the back of my neck, forced my mouth to press against his, hard, firm. He used his tongue and lips to force my mouth open. I opened to him, and we took turns exploring each other's mouths. He came to his knees, hand still pressed to the back of my neck, our mouths still locked together. He drew back, crawling backwards to the head of the bed, leaving me kneeling alone in the center of the bed. He reached under the covers, drew out pillows, propped himself up, watching me. There was something almost decadent about him naked, propped up, watching me. I knelt looking back at him, having a little trouble focusing, thinking. I finally managed to say, "What's wrong?"
"Nothing,"
he said, voice deep, lower than normal. It wasn't the growl of his beast, it was a peculiarly male sound.
"I want to run my beast through you, Anita."
For a split second, I thought it was a euphemism. Then I realized he meant exactly what he'd said.
"Richard, I don't know."
"I know you don't like otherworldly stuff during sex, but Anita..."
He settled into the pillows in a strange smoothing motion that somehow reminded me that he wasn't human.
"I felt your beast. It rolled through me."
Just hearing it out loud took a little of the glow off for me. I slumped back against the bed, still on my knees, but no longer upright, hands limp in my lap.
Richard, I haven't had time to think this through. I don't know how I feel about it yet.
It's not all bad, Anita. Some of it can be wondrous.
This from the man who had hated his beast for the entire time I'd known him. But I didn't say that out loud. I just looked at him. He smiled.
I know how strange that sounds coming from me.
I looked at him harder. He laughed, settling lower on the pillows until he was sprawled in front of me. One leg bent up so he wouldn't touch me, but close enough that I could have touched him. He lay there unself-consciously nude, which I'd seen before, but it was more than that. He seemed bathed in a comfortableness that was rare for Richard. I'd seen it at the Lupinar, that he'd accepted his beast. But it was more than that. He'd accepted himself. What do you want from me, Richard? This was his cue to get serious, to demand I be less bloodthirsty or a half dozen other impossible things. He didn't.
I want this, he said,
and I felt the prickling rush of his power a second before it passed through me like a warm ghost. I shuddered with it.
I don't know, Richard. I don't know if this is a good idea.
It would have sounded better if my voice hadn't had a tremble in it. I expected him to question or talk, but he didn't. I felt his power like a brush of thunder a second before it smashed into me. I had a second of panic, a moment to wonder if his beast and mine would claw me apart. Then his power rubbed through me like a velvet glove. My beast rose as if from a great, warm, wet depth, up, up to meet the warm, burning rush of Richard's energy. He pushed his beast through me, and I could feel it, impossibly huge, the brush of fur so deep inside me that I cried out. I felt his beast as if it had crawled inside me and was caressing things from the inside that his hands would never have touched. My power seemed less certain than his, less solid. But it rose around the hard, muscled fur like velvet mist, swirling through his power, through my own body, until it felt as if something huge was growing inside me, something I'd never felt before, swelling inside me. It felt larger than my body, as if I couldn't hold it inside myself, like a cup filled to the brim with something hot and scalding, but the liquid kept pouring in, and still I held it until it burst over me, through me, out of me, in a roar of power that turned the world golden and slow, drew my body to its knees, curved my back, sent my hands clawing at the air, trying to hold on to something, anything, while my body spilled apart and remade itself on the bed. For a space of labored heartbeats, I thought he'd brought on the change, and I had slipped my skin for real, but it wasn't that. I felt like I was floating, and only gradually felt my body again. I lay on my back, my knees folded under me, hands limp at my sides, so relaxed it was like being drugged. I felt the bed move under me, and a moment later Richard appeared above me. He was on all fours, looming over me, and I had trouble focusing on his face. He cradled my face, staring into my eyes while I tried to look at him.
Anita, are you all right?
I laughed then, slow and lazy.
Help me get my knees straightened out and I'll be fine.
He helped me straighten my legs, and even then all I wanted to do was just lay there.
What did you do to me?
He lay down beside me, propped on one elbow.
I brought you, using the beasts.
I blinked at him, licked my lips, and tried to think of an intelligent question. Gave up and settled for what I wanted to know.
Is it always like that between lycanthropes?
No,
he said, and leaned over me until his face filled my vision.
No. Only a true Lupa or a true Nimir-Ra can respond to my Ulfric the way you just did.
I touched his chest enough to back him up so I could see his face clearly.
You've never done that with anyone before?
He looked down then, a curtain of his hair sliding over his face, hiding it from me.
I pushed his hair back so I could see that nearly perfect profile. "Who?" I asked. Heat washed up his neck and face. I wasn't sure I'd ever seen him blush before. "It was Reyna, wasn't it?" He nodded.
"Yes."
I let his hair fall back in place and lay there for a few seconds thinking about it. Then I was laughing, and couldn't stop. He was back at my shoulder, peering down at me.
"Anita."
The laughter faded as I looked into his worried eyes. "When you forced Reyna to give you up all those years ago, did you know that she was the only one that could do this with you?" He nodded, face solemn.
"Reyna pointed out the downside to not being her pet."
I took his hand and slid it down the front of my satin bottoms. His fingertips found the wetness that had soaked through the satin, and I didn't have to guide his hand anymore. He cupped that big hand of his over my groin, and the cloth was soaked through. He traced fingertips across my inner thigh, and the skin was wet, wet down to my knees. "How did you give it up?" My voice came out in a whisper. His finger slid up the inside of my thigh in the hollow just below. He leaned in to kiss me as his finger slid slowly, slowly upward across the moist skin, under the wet satin. His mouth stayed just above mine, so close that a sharp breath would have made us touch. He spoke, his breath warm on my skin as his finger caressed the edge of me.
"No amount of pleasure was worth her price."
Two things happened at once. He kissed me, and his fingers slid inside of me. I screamed against his mouth, back arching, fingernails digging into his shoulder, as his finger found that small spot and thrust over and over it until he brought me again. The world had soft white edges, like seeing through gauze. I felt the bed move, but couldn't focus, couldn't see, wasn't sure I cared what was happening. Hands fumbled at my shorts. I blinked up to see Richard kneeling over me. He slid my shorts down, spread my legs, and knelt between them. He leaned over me, raising the satin camisole, baring my breasts. He ran his hands across them, made me writhe, then moved his hands down the line of my body, his hands gripping my thighs, bringing me in a harsh jerk against his body. The moment he rubbed against the outside of me, I felt the rubbery latex of the condom. I looked up at his face and asked, "How did you know?" He moved so that his lower body was lying between my legs, but still pressed against the outside of my body. Most of his weight was supported by his arms like a modified push-up position.
"Do you really think Jean-Claude would warn me about the ardeur and not warn me that you weren't on birth control?"
"Good point," I said.
"No,"
he said.
"This is."
I felt the movement of his hips seconds before he thrust inside me, in one powerful motion that drove sounds from my mouth, somewhere between a scream and a shout. He lowered his head enough to see my face. I lay gasping under him, but whatever he saw there reassured him because he arched his back, his face looking somewhere in the distance, and drew himself out of me, slowly, inch by inch, until I made small noises. He drew himself out until he was barely touching inside me. I gazed down the length of my body to see him stretched hard and ready. He'd always been careful of me because he wasn't small. That one first thrust had been more force than he'd ever before allowed himself. He, like Micah, filled me up, hit that point deep inside that was either pain or pleasure. I saw his back and hips flex a second before he thrust into me. I watched him thrust into me, saw every inch of him plunge into me until it bowed my back, my neck, and I couldn't watch because I was writhing underneath him, my hands scrambling at the bedspread, digging fingers into the covers. He drew himself out of me again, and I stopped him with a hand on his stomach. "Wait, wait." I was having trouble breathing.
"It's not hurting you. I can tell by your face, your eyes, your body."
I swallowed, took a shaky breath, and said, "No, it's not hurting me. It feels wonderful, but You've always been so careful, even when I asked you not to be. What's changed?
He looked down at me, his hair falling around his face like a silken frame.
I was always afraid of hurting you before, but I felt your beast.
I haven't changed yet, Richard. We don't know for sure.
Anita,
he said softly, and I knew he was chiding me. Maybe it was a case of the lady protesting too much, but still.
I'm still human, Richard. I haven't changed yet.
He leaned over me, his hair gliding around my face as he kissed me gently on the cheek.
Even before the first full moon, we can take more damage. The change has already begun, Anita.
I pushed against his chest until he drew back enough for me to see his face.
You've always been holding back, haven't you?
Yes,
he said. I searched his face and saw such need in his eyes, and I knew why he'd been so angry at Gregory. He'd said that he almost regretted not making me his Lupa in truth, now that he'd seen me be Nimmer Ra, but it was more than that. I looked into his brown eyes in the spill of early morning light and knew that he'd wanted me to be what he was, even though he hated it, that at some level he'd been tempted to make me his Lupa for real. Somewhere in the lovemaking, where he had to be so careful, he'd thought of it more than once. It was all there in eyes, his face. He started to look away as if he could feel that I saw it all, but he made himself look back, meet my gaze. He was almost defiant.
How careful have you been of me, Richard?
He did look away then, using his hair as a shield. I reached through that thick hair to touch his face, to turn him to look at me.
Richard, how careful have you been of me?
There was something close to pain in his eyes. He whispered,
Very.
I held his face between my hands.
You don't have to be careful anymore.
A look of soft wonderment crossed his face, and he bent his head down, and we kissed. Kissed as we had earlier, propping, exploring, taking turns at thrusting into each other. He drew slowly back from the kiss, and I felt the tip of him touch my opening. I stared down the length of our bodies so I could watch as his body flexed above me, and he thrust himself inside me harder this time, quicker. It brought my breath in a soundless scream.
Anita.
I opened my eyes, not realizing I'd closed them. I gazed up at him.
Don't be careful anymore, Richard. Don't be careful.
He smiled, gave me a quick kiss. Then he was back, arched above me, and this time he didn't stop. He thrust every inch of himself into me as hard and as fast as he could. The sound of flesh into flesh became a constant sound, a wet hammering. I realized it hadn't been just his size that made him careful, but his strength. He could have bench-pressed the bed we lay on, and that strength lay not just in his arms or back, but in his legs, his thighs, in the body he was pressing inside me over and over again. For the first time ever, I began to appreciate the full power of him. I'd felt the strength in his hands, his arms, when he held me, but it was nothing to this. He made of our bodies one body, one pounding, sweating, soaking, drenching piece of flesh. I was vaguely aware that it did hurt, that I was bruising, and I didn't care. I called out his name as my body tightened around his, squeezing, and I spasmed underneath him, body slamming against the bed, not from Richard's thrusts, but from the power of the orgasm itself. Screams spilled from my throat as my body rocked underneath him. It felt good, better than almost anything, but it was almost violence, almost pain, almost frightening. Somewhere in the midst of it all, I was aware that he came, too. He screamed my name, but held his place, while I continued to writhe and fight underneath him. It wasn't until I lay quiet that he allowed himself to collapse on top of me, slightly to one side so my face wouldn't be pressed into his chest. We lay in a sweating, breathless heap, waiting for our hearts to slow enough to speak. He found his voice first.
Thank you. Thank you for trusting me.
I laughed.
You're thanking me.
I raised his hand to my mouth and kissed the palm, then rested his hand against my face.
Trust me, Richard. It was my pleasure.
He laughed, that rich, throaty sound that is purely male and purely sexual.
We're going to need another shower.
Whichever of us can walk first can have the first shower, I said. He laughed and hugged me. I wasn't even sure my legs would work enough to shower at all. Maybe a bath.
38. I woke just enough to feel the weight of someone at my back. I snuggled against that warmth, wrapping sleep back around me. An arm spilled over my shoulder, and I wriggled into the circle of arm and body. It wasn't the warmth or the feel of him that woke me. The were-leopards had gotten me used to all that. It was the scent of his skin. By the scent alone, I knew it was Richard. I opened my eyes and snuggled deeper against him, curling that dark, muscled arm tighter around my body like drawing a cozy blanket around me. Of course, a blanket didn't have the hard weight of Richard, or the silken glide of his naked skin against mine, or the ability to cuddle back, to use hands to pull my body tighter in against him. He closed the distance, worked until, even with the height difference, his chest, stomach, and hips were curled around me. He gave one last movement, and I could feel him pressed hard and ready against the back of my body. It was morning. He was male, but it wasn't something embarrassing to be ignored. I could pay as much or as little attention to it as I wanted, and I wanted. I started to roll over in the almost tight circle of his body and found I was stiff. My lower body felt bruised, aching, but in a good way. I laughed as he opened his arms enough for me to roll onto my back.
"What's so funny?"
Richard asked. I stared up at him, still laughing, I think to keep from groaning.
"I'm stiff."
He wiggled his eyebrows at me.
"So am I."
I blushed, and he kissed my nose, then my mouth, but still chaste, still not really sexual. It made me laugh. If it had been anyone but me, I'd have said I giggled. The next kiss wasn't chaste, and the one after that pressed me back against the bed. He slid his leg between my thighs until his knee touched me, and I winced. He drew back.
"Are you too sore for this?"
"I'm willing to give it the old college try," I said, "but honestly, maybe." He stayed propped above me, fingers moving a lock of hair from my cheek.
"What I did last night would have broken things inside an ordinary human."
I didn't need a mirror to feel my eyes go cool. I'd really been trying not to think about it.
"I'm sorry,"
he said.
"I didn't mean to ruin the mood."
He smiled suddenly and looked younger, more relaxed than I'd seen him in a long time.
"I'm just glad to be with someone I don't have to worry about hurting."
I had to smile at him. "I'm not hurt, but we might have to try something a little more gentle this morning." The humor faded, and something else filled his eyes as he lowered his face for another kiss. He spoke as he moved towards me.
"I think we can come up with something."
He kissed my lips, then worked one kiss at a time down my neck, my shoulders. He got distracted at my breasts, covering them in kisses, his tongue licking a quick, wet line across one nipple. He cupped one breast in his hands, holding it in the circle of his warmth, sliding his mouth over the nipple, taking as much of the breast into his mouth as he could. He sucked me into his mouth until he held over half my breast in the wet warmth. And with that touch, the ardor flared up through my body from wherever it had been hiding. Richard drew back from my breast, hands still cradling it.
"What was that?"
There were goosebumps on his arms.
"The ardeur,"
I said, voice soft. He licked his lips and I saw real fear in his eyes.
"Jean-Claude told me about it, even let me feel his own version of it, but I didn't really believe it. I don't think I wanted to believe it."
My beast had awoken with the ardeur, as if one hunger fed the other. I felt it uncurl inside me and stretch for all the world, like some great cat waking from a nap. It rolled through me, reaching out to Richard, and his beast woke to it.
One hand was on the solid warmth of his chest, but I could feel something else in there, something moving around as if his chest were hollow and there was something caged inside. He gripped my hand, moved it back from his chest.
What are you doing?
The Ardeur calls to our beasts, Richard. I snuggled down underneath him, my hand sliding down his body, tracing the flatness of his stomach, the curve of his hip. He grabbed my hand just before I could touch him. He had both my hands now trapped in his larger ones. It didn't bother me because I knew that I could touch him with things other than my hands, or even my body. I remembered the feel of his beast thrusting through me, and I spilled mine into him in a hot push of energy. He jumped off of me, rolled out of the bed in a movement that was almost too quick to follow with the eyes. He stood by the bed, breath coming in ragged gasps as if he'd been running. I could feel his fear like fine champagne. It added to the sex, brought me to my knees to crawl from the tangle of covers to the edge of the bed. I could smell how warm he was. The scent of his skin came to me on the air, the faint sweetness of the cologne he'd put on the day before. My gaze wandered over the beauty of him. His sleep-tousled hair hung in a heavy mass over one side of his face. He brushed the thickness of it back from his face with one hand, and a toss of his head, and that one simple movement made things low in my body tighten. But underneath the sex was the thought of what all that smooth, hard skin would feel like under my teeth. I wanted to mark him as I'd marked Nathaniel. I wanted to sink my teeth into his flesh and bite. I had a flash of what it felt like to taste him like so much meat, to feel his body respond, not just to the sex, but to the hunger. And I knew for the first time why shapeshifters spoke of the hunger like it should be in all capital letters. Reyna had risen her lascivious head. The Ardeur overrode or overpowered her, but she was there, supplying images to the things I was feeling. I slid off the bed, and Richard backed up. I could see his pulse in his neck, beating like a trapped thing. His beast was trapped too, trapped by his control, his fear. I could feel it as if it were literally pacing inside his body, like a wolf in a cage at the zoo, pacing, pacing, never free. It might be a large, roomy cage, but it was still a cage. Reyna gave me a visual that drove me to my knees. I saw Richard pinned under my body, chained to a bed, and when he came inside me, he shifted at the same moment. That was release for the shapeshifters. Anything else was holding back. Richard knelt in front of me.
Are you all right?
He touched my arm, and that was a bad thing. My beast roared across our skins, hit his in a blow that I felt physically in my stomach and ribs like a punch. It staggered Richard, made him fall forward into me, and we clung for a second, arms around each other, our bodies pressed together. The Ardeur flared over us like invisible flame, and we knelt in the heart of that fire like the wick of a candle. His heart beat against my arms, where they lay pressed to his chest, as if my skin had become a drum and he beat inside me, filled me with the rhythm of his body. My own heartbeat found a home inside Richard's body. We were filled with the rise and fall, the pulse and beat of each other, until I couldn't tell whose heart was in my chest, whose blood rushed through us. For a trembling moment, we pressed above one another, as if our skin would give way and we would finally be what the marks had promised, one being, one body, one soul. The power broke apart as Richard struggled against it like a drowning man, breaking apart the power like arms shatter water. You can move it, disrupt it, but it flows back around you, swells over you, engulfs you. Richard screamed, and I felt him fall back. I opened my eyes as his hand pulled away, and my hand tried to hold him. His hand was almost free, only his fingers still caught in mine, when the Ardeur pressed around us, and I knew his control was fragile enough that I would feed. I felt his confusion, felt him struggling to decide what to hold on to and what to let go. I realized that the shields had come down long ago, because he couldn't hold the marks closed, keep himself in human form, and keep me from feeding all at the same time. He screamed again, and I felt Richard decide, felt the conscious choice of the lesser evil. He shoved his beast down, down deep inside himself, and he shut the marks between us like slamming a door. It was so sudden that it felt like the world had lurched. I had a moment of dizziness, was almost sick. Then the Ardeur rode over us, through us, like a thundering thing to trample us both underfoot, until we were just flesh, bone, blood, just meat, just need. I saw Richard's back arch, his head fling back, and through the Ardeur I felt the growing pressure, tightness in his body, seconds before that hot release spilled over him, and I held his hand while his body rocked with the strength of it, and the pleasure of it drew me to my knees, almost as if the power itself lifted me up for a second, held me, rocked me, and I fed until we were left lying on the floor, sweat-covered, breathing in gasps, our hands still locked together. Richard pulled away first. He lay there, eyes unfocused, breathing labored, his heart beating too fast, filling his throat. He swallowed hard enough that it sounded like it hurt. I felt weighted, heavy with the feeding, almost like I could sleep again, like a snake after a big meal. Richard found his voice first.
You had no right to feed off me.
I thought that was the idea of you staying until morning, I said. He sat up slowly as if he were stiff now.
It was.
You never said no. I rolled onto my side, but didn't try and sit up yet. He nodded.
I know that. I'm not blaming you.
He was, but at least he was trying not to. You could have stopped me, Richard. All you had to do was either leave the marks open between us or let your beast go. You could have held the Ardeur out. You made your choice on what to control.
I know that, too.
But he wouldn't look at me. I propped myself up on my arms, almost sitting. Then what's wrong? He shook his head and got to his feet. He was a little unsteady, but he went for the door.
I'm leaving, Anita.
You make that sound awfully permanent, Richard. He turned and looked at me.
No one feeds off me. No one.
He'd closed himself so tight that I couldn't tell what he was feeling, but it was plain on his face. Pain. His eyes held some deep pain, and he'd pulled so far away in his mind, his heart, that I couldn't tell what it was, only that it hurt him. So you won't be here tomorrow morning when the Ardeur comes again? My voice sounded almost neutral when I asked. He shook his head, all that heavy hair sliding around his shoulders. His hand was on the doorknob, his body turned away enough that he hid himself from me as much as he could.
I can't do this again, Anita. For God's sake, you have the same rule. No one feeds on you either.
I sat up, arms wrapping around my knees, holding them tight to my chest. I guess I was covering my nakedness, too. You've felt the Ardeur now, Richard. If I can't feed off of you, then who? Who do you want me to share this with?
Jean-Claude.
But his voice dropped off before he could finish. It's a little afternoon, and he's still dead to the world. He won't wake in time to share the Ardeur with me. His hand tightened on the doorknob, hard enough for me to see the muscles in his arm tense.
The Nimir Raj, then. I'm told you've already fed on him once anyway.
I don't know Micah that well, Richard. I took a deep breath and said, I don't love him, Richard. I love you. I want you.
You want to feed off me? You want me to be your cow?
No, I said. No.
I am not food, Anita, not for you or anyone else. I am Ulfric of the Thronos Roque clan, and I am not cattle. I am the thing that eats the cattle.
If you had shifted, then you could have blocked the Ardeur, kept me from feeding. Why didn't you? He leaned his forehead against the door.
I don't know.
Honesty, Richard, at least with yourself. He turned then, and his anger flared across my skin like a whip.
You want honesty? Fine, we can have honesty. I hate what I am. I want a life, Anita. I want a real life. I want free of all this shit. I don't want to be Ulfric. I don't want to be a werewolf. I just want a life.
You have a life, Richard. It's just not the life you thought it would be.
And I don't want to love someone who is more at home with the monsters than I am.
I just looked at him, hugging my knees to my bare chest, my back pressed up against the bed. I looked at him because I couldn't think of a damn thing to say.
I'm sorry, Anita, but I can't, won't do this.
He opened the door then. He opened the door and he walked out, closing it behind him. The door closed with a soft, firm click. I sat there for a few seconds, not moving. I don't even think I was breathing. Then slowly the tears squeezed out, and my first breath was a ragged gasp that hurt my throat. I rolled slowly to the floor, lying in a tight, tight ball. I lay on the floor and cried until I was cold and shivering. That's how Nathaniel found me. He pulled the blanket from the bed and wrapped it around me, picked me up and climbed onto the bed with me in his arms. He held me in the curve of his body, spooned against me, and I couldn't feel him through the thick blanket. He held me and stroked my hair. I felt the bed move and opened my eyes to find Cherry and Zane crawling around me. They touched my face, took my tears with the tips of their fingers, and curled around me on the other side until I was cupped in their warmth. Gregory and Vivian came next and climbed onto the bed until we all lay in a warm, thick nest of bodies and covers. And I was hot and had to peel the blanket back, and their hands spilled over me, touching, holding. I realized that I was still naked and so were they. No one ever put on clothes unless I made them. But the touching wasn't sexual, it was comfort, the warm pile of puppies, and everyone in that pile loved me in their way. Maybe it wasn't the way I wanted to be loved, but love is love, and sometimes I think I'd thrown away more love than most people ever get a chance at. I was trying to be more careful lately. They held me until I fell asleep, exhausted with crying, skin hot. But down in the center of my being was a cold, icy spot that they couldn't touch. It was the place where I loved Richard, had always loved Richard, almost from the first time I'd seen him. But he was right on one thing. We couldn't keep doing this. I wouldn't keep doing this. It was over. It had to be over. He hated what he was, and now he hated what I was. He said he wanted someone that he wouldn't have to worry about hurting, and he did want that, but he also wanted someone human, ordinary. He couldn't have both, but that didn't keep him from wanting both. I couldn't be ordinary, and I wasn't sure I'd ever been human. I couldn't be what Richard wanted me to be, and he couldn't stop wanting it. Richard was a riddle with no answer, and I was tired of playing a game I couldn't win. 39. I slept like I was drugged, heavy with harsh fragmented dreams or nothingness. I don't know when I would have woken, but someone was licking my cheek. If they'd shaken me or called my name, I might have been able to ignore it, but someone was licking my cheek in long, languorous movements that I couldn't ignore. I opened my eyes and found Cherry's face so close I couldn't focus on it. She moved back just enough so I wouldn't feel cross-eyed looking at her, then said,
"You were having a nightmare. I thought we should wake you."
Her voice was neutral, her face blank, cheerful in an anonymous sort of way. It was her nurse face, cheerful, comforting, telling you nothing. The fact that she was naked, lying on her side, propped up on one elbow so that her body showed in one long line, didn't seem to distract from her professionalism. I could never pull that off naked. No matter what else was happening, I was always aware that I didn't have clothes on.
"I don't remember what I was dreaming," I said. I raised a hand to smooth the wetness along my cheek.
"You taste salty from all the crying," she said.
The bed moved and Zane peeked around my other shoulder.
"Can I lick the other cheek?"
It made me laugh, and that was almost miracle enough to let him do it. Almost. I sat up and instantly regretted it. My whole body felt stiff and abused, aching as if I'd been beaten.
Hell, I'd felt better after some of the beatings I'd taken over the years. I hugged the blanket to me, partially to cover my nakedness, partially because I was cold. I leaned against the head of the bed, frowning. You said nightmare. What time is it?
About 5, Cherry said. I could say daymare if you like, but either way you were...
She hesitated.
Whimpering in your sleep.
I hugged the blanket tighter.
I don't remember.
She sat up, patting my knee under the blanket.
Are you hungry?
I shook my head. She and Zane exchanged one of those looks that say just how worried about you people are. It made me angry. Look, I'm okay. They both looked at me. I frowned at them. I'll be okay, all right? They didn't look convinced.
I need to get dressed.
They both just lay there staring at me. Which means get out and give me some space. They exchanged another of those looks, which bugged me, but at a nod from Cherry, they both got up off the bed and went for the door. And put some clothes on, I said.
If it'll make you feel better, Cherry said.
It will, I said. Zane gave a little salute.
Your wish is our command.
That was actually a little too close to the truth, but I let it go. When they were gone, I picked out some clothes, some weapons, and made it to the bathroom without seeing anyone. I wouldn't have put it past Cherry to make sure I had a clear shot to the bathroom. They were managing me, but this morning, make that afternoon, I didn't care enough to complain. I was as quick in the bathroom as I could be, and for some reason, I didn't like looking in the mirror. I was trying not to think, and seeing my eyes staring back at me like those of a shock victim made it hard not to think about why I looked so pale, so shell-shocked. I put on my usual black undies and matching bra. It was getting to the point where I didn't own a white bra. Jean-Claude's fault. Black jogging socks, black jeans, black polo shirt, shoulder rig, complete with Browning high power, the Firestar in its interpants holster in front almost lost against the black shirt. I even added the wrist sheaths and the 2 silver knives. I didn't need this much firepower for walking around the house, especially with so many shapeshifters running around, but I was feeling shaky, as if my world was less solid today than yesterday. I'd always thought that Richard and I would work something out. I wasn't sure what, but something. Now I didn't believe that. We weren't going to work anything out. We weren't going to be anything except the bare minimum to each other. I wasn't even sure his invitation to be Bulwark was still on the table. I hoped so. I could lose him as my lover, but I couldn't let him send the pack to rack and ruin. If he didn't cooperate, I wasn't sure how I was going to stop it, but that was a problem for another day. Today, my goal was just to survive, just to get through the day. I huddled my weapons around me like comfort objects. If I'd been alone in the house, or if it had just been Nathaniel, I would have carried Sigmund, my stuffed toy penguin, around with me. That was how bad a day it was. I did have a moment when I caught a glimpse of myself in the mirror in my bedroom, where I stopped and had to smile. I looked like I was dressed in casual assassin chic. I'd teased some of my friends who were assassins or bounty hunters about assassin chic, but sometimes you gotta go with the stereotypes. Besides, I look great in black. The black-on-black look made my skin look almost translucent, like it should have glowed. My eyes were swimmingly dark. I looked almost ethereal, like a wingless angel on a bad day. All right, maybe a fallen angel, but the effect was still striking. I'd learned long ago that if you're feeling unloved by the man in your life, the best revenge is to look good. If I'd really wanted to follow the strategy completely, I'd have put on makeup. But screw that. I was still on vacation. I didn't wear makeup on vacation. There was a crowd in the kitchen. The order for everyone to wear clothes had been taken to heart. Cherry had on cut-off jean shorts and a white men's shirt with the sleeves torn off, so that little bits of thread decorated the armholes. She'd tied the ends of the shirt so her stomach showed as she moved around the kitchen. Zane's gaze followed her wherever she moved. I wasn't sure how Cherry felt about him, but Zane was beginning to act like a man in love, or at least very serious lust. He sat at the table wearing the leather pants he'd taken off last night, ignoring his coffee and watching Cherry. Caleb leaned against the counter in his jeans, with the top button unbuttoned so that his belly button ring showed. He sipped coffee and watched Zane watch Cherry with an odd look on his face. I couldn't decipher it, but I didn't like it, as if he were trying to think how to cause trouble between them. Caleb struck me as one of those who liked to cause trouble. Nathaniel was sitting at the table, his long hair in a braid down his back, chest bare, but I knew without checking that he'd have something on. He knew me well enough to know I liked my house guests clothed. Igor and Claudia stood when I came into the room. His tattoos were even more striking in the full light of day. They graced his arms, what I could see of his chest through the white tank top, and the sides of his neck like liquid jewels, brilliant, eye-catching. Even from a distance, they were beautiful against his pale skin. I wasn't much into tattoos, but I couldn't picture Igor without them. The look just worked for him. He'd put on the shoulder rig, and it still looked like it should chafe with the tank top. But hey, it wasn't my skin. The Glock sat under his arm, a black spot on all that pretty color, like an imperfection on a Picasso. Claudia looked positively ordinary beside him. If a woman that was so damn close to 7 feet and muscled better than most men could look ordinary. The gun at the small of her back wasn't nearly as noticeable as Igor's. Her black hair was still pulled back in a tight ponytail, leaving her face clean and empty, and that included her eyes. Claudia had cop eyes, or bad guy eyes, the eyes of someone who doesn't let you see what's inside. I didn't meet many women with eyes like that outside of the police. If her face had been a little softer, she'd have been beautiful. But there was something in the set of her jaw, the way she held that full mouth that said, "Back off, no touching." It robbed her of something that would have changed everything about her. The two of them came to take up posts to either side and a little behind me. I would have protested, but I'd discovered last night that it didn't do much good. They took their orders from Raphael, not me. He'd said, "Keep her safe," and that was what they were going to do. I was too, whatever the hell I was, to waste energy on telling them to back off. They could follow me around if it made them feel better. This afternoon, I just didn't care. Merle was standing in the corner of the cabinets, near enough to the coffee maker that Igor crowded him while I poured my coffee. I didn't know who had made a fresh pot, and I didn't care. Just the sight and smell of it made me feel better. Merle was wearing the cowboy boots, jeans, and jean jacket over bare chest that he'd had on last night. He was sipping coffee out of one of the few plain mugs I owned. The scar on his chest was very white, ragged, pitted in one spot as if that had been the deepest part of the wound. It did look like lightning carved into his chest and stomach. I wanted to ask what had happened, but there was a look to his eyes as he watched the kitchen that said he probably wouldn't tell me, and he'd definitely see it as intrusive. None of my business anyway. The only chairs open at the table gave their backs to the bay window and the sliding glass door. I hated sitting with my back to a window or a door, especially a door. Nathaniel touched Zane's arm. He glanced back at me, then got up, coffee cup and all, and went around to the chair that backed the door. Cherry sat beside him, though her chair had been Claudia's, and it was turned so that she had the view of both doors. Cherry moved the chair closer to Zane, giving her back to all that glass. There'd been a time when I wasn't this careful, especially at home, but today was going to be one of my paranoid days. Insecurity had that effect on me, even emotional insecurity. Claudia sat beside me. Igor leaned against the island behind me, keeping an eye on Merle, I think. They didn't seem to like each other. I took the first sip of coffee, hot, black, and let the warmth fill me for a few seconds before I asked, "Where's Gregory?"
"Stephen and Vivian took him back to their apartment," Cherry said.
"But he's all right?" I asked. She nodded, smiling that smile that made her look years younger than we both were.
"He's healed, Anita. You healed him."
I called his beast. I didn't heal him. She shrugged.
"Same difference."
I shook my head. "No. I couldn't heal him last night." She frowned, and even that was pretty.
She was buzzed today, shining with it. I glanced at Zane, who was still gazing at her. Maybe it was love for both of them. Something had certainly put a twinkle in her eye.
For heaven's sake, Anita, you saved him. Does it really matter how you did it?
It was my turn to shrug. I just don't like the fact that Reyna's Munin seems to be interfering more and more when I try to heal. The doorbell rang, and I jumped like I'd been shot. Nervous? Who, me?
I ordered takeout, Nathaniel said.
I looked at him. Please tell me it's Chinese. He nodded, smiling, I think, at my pleased expression. We'd discovered that though no Chinese restaurant would ordinarily deliver out this far, that for a sizable tip, and I mean sizable, they'd make an exception for us. Nathaniel got up, but Caleb pushed away from the door.
I'll get it. I don't seem to be much use for anything else.
He set his mug on the island and threaded his way between us to vanish into the living room. What's his problem today? I asked.
Igor answered. He tried to get friendly with Claudia.
And me,
Cherry said. I looked from Cherry's smiling face to Claudia's frown. And he's not bleeding or bruised?
It wasn't necessary to hurt him, Claudia said. Only to be very, very clear.
The tone in her voice and the look in her eyes made my own eyes go cold. I don't know if I'd ever met a woman that had that effect on me. It made me feel sexist to say that it was more unnerving because she was a woman, but it was still true. Her nostrils flared, and I watched all of them sniff the air. Everyone moved at once, scattering around the room. Claudia stood, grabbed my arm, my gun arm, and pulled me back towards the far side of the kitchen and the wall. She already had her gun out in her right hand. I jerked my gun arm free as Igor moved with her and they stood in front of me, blocking my view. Igor had his gun out too. I was about to ask what the hell was going on when I smelled it. The acrid, musty scent of snakes. I had the Browning out and pointed at the door, sighted two-handed when the first snake man came through the kitchen doorway with Caleb in front of him, a sawed-off shotgun pressed into the angle of his jaw.
Anyone moves, and he dies.
40. Everyone froze as if we'd all taken a collective breath and held it.
No one has to die here,
the snake man said. He looked at me with a huge, copper-colored eye. The strong black stripe that edged the eyes looked like dramatic makeup. There were no scars on this one's face. He was shorter and seemed younger. His scaled face almost managed a smile, but the jaw of a snake is just not made for smiling. His eyes were as empty and alien as the rest of him.
Our boss just wants to talk to Miss Blake. That's all.
Have him pick up the damn phone and make an appointment, I said. I was staring down the barrel of the Browning at a point near the center of his chest, far enough up from Caleb's head that I wasn't worried about shooting him, but close enough to the throat that with the ammo I had in the gun, it might pretty much decapitate him. If he ever moved the gun barrel out of Caleb's jaw. A sawed-off shotgun with silver shot at touching range, and Caleb would be gone. I didn't much like him, but I couldn't let the bad guys blow his head off, could I?
He didn't think you'd come, the snake man said.
You go away. Have him call, and I promise to give it the consideration it deserves. My voice was quiet because I was stilling my breath as much as I could, waiting for that one shot if it ever came. The snake man ground the barrel into Caleb's neck until he forced a small pain sound from him.
This is silver shot, Miss Blake. At this range, it'll take his head.
The second after he dies, so do you,
Claudia said it. Her voice as quiet and steady as the arm that held the gun that was pointed at the snake man's head. He gave a hissing laugh, and it was echoed from behind him. More of the things started to move up in the open doorway. I caught a flash of silver metal, more guns.
No one else comes through that doorway, or I'll blow you away and let Caleb take his chances.
He pushed the barrel of the shotgun into Caleb's jaw until the smaller man had to rise on tiptoe, and I saw the first hints of panic on his face.
I don't think she likes you very much,
the snake man hissed. Doesn't matter, I said. I'm not letting you bring more guns into this room.
You promise not to hurt Anita.
It was Merle. I'd almost forgotten him standing to one side and behind us.
We won't harm a hair on her head.
We can smell that you're lying, Claudia said. The snake head turned to one side, bird-like.
Most people can't smell changes in us. Can't smell anything but the stink of snake.
Cherry's voice.
Anita.
My eyes flickered to her, and I saw movement outside the sliding glass doors. They were trying to flank us.
We've got movement on this side,
Igor said. For once, other people had guns, and they seemed to know what they were doing. How refreshing. My gaze turned back to the snake man in time to see him motion with the barrel of the gun towards the glass.
We have the house surrounded. There is no need for all of you to die.
Claudia fired a second before I did. Her bullet hit him in the face. Mine took him high on the chest, low on the neck. His head vanished in a welter of blood and thicker things. My ears rang with the shots in the small space. The snake's body jerked back. The shotgun went off as his hand convulsed. Caleb threw himself to the floor towards us. Two more snake men came through the door, shoulder to shoulder, both with shotguns. Claudia said, left. I shot the one on the right, and she took the one on the left. Both of us hit what we aimed at, and the two fell to the floor, one shotgun skidding across the floor towards us. Another shotgun blast exploded to our left. I turned towards the noise. I couldn't help it. The sliding glass door had shattered, and I hadn't heard the sound of falling glass, just the shotgun roaring. Igor was kneeling, using the island as cover, as he put two shots into the chest of a man. The man fell to his knees abruptly, like a puppet whose strings had been cut. Incoming, Claudia said, and I turned back to the other door. I could see the barrel of a shiny revolver, something nickel-plated. Claudia was standing with her body pressed to the cabinets on the near wall, almost hidden from the door. She fired twice at that shiny barrel, and there was a scream that overrode the ringing in my ears. A screaming that went on and on like the squeal of a baby rabbit when a cat gets it. Dimly, I heard someone yell, "Shut up, Felix!" Shots showered into the room from the side of the inner door that neither Claudia nor I could see and still stay hidden. Someone touched my arm and I whirled, smacking into Nathaniel with the barrel of the Browning. He pointed. Igor was on the floor on his side with the first hint of crimson trickling across the floor. I saw Zane and Cherry under the table hugging the ground. I caught a glimpse of Merle farther back, tucked into the corner of the cabinets, probably better hidden than any of us. What do you do in a gunfight if you have no gun? Hide? I had a moment of meeting Merle's eyes before I turned back to the wreckage. A man stepped through the broken sliding glass door, a pump-action shotgun in his hands. He pumped around in as he stepped through the door. I shot him three times before his knees collapsed from under him. He should have had the round pumped in before he stepped through the door. Claudia was putting bullets into the inner door. I don't think she was hitting anything now, but she was keeping them from rushing us. Nothing else moved in the broken door, but I stayed crouched, gun aimed, two-handed at the opening. Bullets rained down from the inner door, and Claudia and I hugged the cabinets. I kept an eye on the far door, but I couldn't keep aimed and take cover at the same time. Another shotgun blast roared through the room from the little window above the sink. It took a big bite out of the island cabinets. I was as low to the ground as I could get, on my butt, pressed to the cabinets, but I kept the Browning on the sliding glass door. The shotgun sent another blast through the little window, and the shots from the living room came one after the other, not aiming, just keeping us where we were. I kept my eyes and my gun on the far door. They were shooting to cover something, and that was the only door left. Three of them came through the sliding door, and everything slowed down. I was seeing the world through crystal, everything sharp-edged. I had all the time in the world to see the two snakes and the lion man Marco come through in a blur of movement that was so fast I knew that none of them was human. I saw the shotguns, long and black, barrels impossibly long. The lion, Marco, had a 9mm in each hand. I had an impression of blonde and golden fur before my first bullet took him in the side, spun him around. Claudia fired into one of the snakes, dropped him, but the other shotgun roared and I felt her stagger above me. I put two shots into the